You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 1st, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the set of Paul Ryan, Fire Walk With Me. It's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Yeah, you're going all Twin Peaks-y on me, Drift Glass.
Yeah. Well, we've...
Twin Peaks, Tony Robbins, right?
We live in a Twin Peaks, Tony Robbins universe, honey, so...
We do. Paul Ryan does, that's for sure.
Yes, he does. He sure does. Oh, I thought we'd only have to walk 5 feet through some warm towels. No, you're going to have to walk 50 miles across hot coals wearing kerosene pants, Paul Ryan. So go for it.
Creepy dream suite sequence either.
No. There are backwards talking weirdos, but really that's just Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So Paul Ryan is currently slipping his resume under the House of Parliament's door going, you know, I am available for parties, for kids' parties, for bar mitzvahs, and to run your country if you'd like.
Well, frankly, England's having a problem finding anybody in the conservative wing that wants to run the country, and I don't blame them.
It's all going.
You want to start with Brexit? Because we didn't get to talk about Brexit at all last week because we hadn't recorded.
They held off the vote until our podcast was done, those bastards.
And we want to do love and kisses and hugs to our friend Andy in Great Britain, who has been writing me constantly since the vote. And I appreciate it so much. We just love him. He's been a very long time listener, long time supporter, financial supporter, awesome guy and runner. He has had great strides in his health with going from basically not being able to walk to running half marathons and marathons and all kinds of stuff. We're so excited for him in that regard. He said, I'm going to need a lot of time to be outside running and also drinking beer right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty
run to the bar, Andy. Run to the bar and back.
But he has been writing me, and I wanted to read a bit of his letter. The first thing he wrote me, he texted me the night of the vote was, I'm watching my country commit suicide, you know, and that is just really hard to take. But here is what Andy said. Just to show that no country has a monopoly on stupidity, mine has decided that the best way to move forward in the 21st century is to try to turn the clock back about 60 years. The reasons we have done this are much more complex than many commentators over here are going on about, and may well involve us in examining uncomfortable truths about ourselves and our neighbors. That's going to be debated in the months to come, but for the time being, we are seen to be lurching from crisis to crisis with no apparent end, for not only the governing party, conservatives, but my own Labour Party, which seems intent on tearing itself apart. Apparently, the leaders of the Leave campaign have no plans for what to do. Much to do with the fact that they didn't expect and really didn't want to win. They just wanted to push the current prime minister out with him winning a narrow Remain victory.
Uh-huh.
It is utter chaos in the political world with effectively nobody in charge of government. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, we still have good titles for jobs though, has gone missing, and some are speculating that he has taken up his youthful habit of snorting lines of cocaine again. Who knows? And frankly, who cares? This is a deeply divided country. You may have seen my tweets regarding this. In the University of Liverpool, where I work, I could not find a single person who had voted to leave the EU. While in the areas where I shop, in Birkenhead, over the water from Liverpool, virtually everybody had voted to leave. Areas separated by a few miles, but they could have been on different continents. When I pointed out to those on Birkenhead Market that EU money was building the construction opposite one of the buildings I helped serve in the university, the reply generally was, we don't care. The dispossessed were given a chance to kick back against anybody, and they grasped it with both hands. The fact that what has been done will have the most adverse effects on the poorest in society seems lost on them. I did try a few of what I thought were rational arguments. They were not met with good feelings, so I thought it best not to push the matter.
Uh-huh.
There is certainly a strong anti-intellectual, what do those experts know, strain to the whole thing. Some of the media, not all, treated much of the debate as entertainment because they thought the usual rules applied. In other words, anything bad would only affect poorer people.
Yep.
Now the chickens are coming home to roost. I have been suggesting that the closing theme from Götterdämmerung replace God Save the Queen as national anthem. Everything going down in flames seems pretty appropriate right now. Scotland will certainly try for independence if it looks as though they will be dragged unwillingly out of the EU. God knows what is going to happen to the Irish-Northern Ireland border, too. That's just the beginning of the chaos, since nobody in charge is willing to move Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty that will start the process of us leaving the EU. So presently, we seem to be in quantum state of being both in and out of the Union. The British people seem to have forgotten the words of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Don't panic.
Yeah.
I'm one of the panicking ones.
Yeah.
And thank you, Andy, for that letter. I especially liked, and I actually sort of put some of Andy's tweets to me in with this letter and put it all together. The part about the media is really important.
It is.
You know, because the media, like it is here, is divided between, you have mainstream, which says, well, both sides, let's report the controversy.
Uh-huh.
The right wing, which didn't warn anybody about, and still isn't, really warning anybody about the consequences of the way you vote, and you know, party loyalty rather than national good being at the core, and then the liberal press. And so you have these three avenues, and no one is really telling the truth. Or if they are telling the truth, as one newspaper commenter put it, you know. There was an article in The Sun, which is a conservative newspaper. It's not owned by Rupert Murdoch, I don't believe, although I might be wrong about that. You know, some of them are and some of them aren't, but there are a lot of conservative tabloids in England. And after the vote, they put out an article about the consequences. Here's what's going to happen to your passport. Here's what's going to happen to jobs. Here's what's going to happen to the bank accounts. Here's how currency is going to work, etc. And, you know, the comments under that article were, why didn't you tell us this before the vote?
Right.
And the follow-up comment was, well, the Remainers did tell us. And then we were told by conservative media that, well, that's just scare tactics.
You know, the liberal media. You know that goddamn liberal media.
You can safely vote leave. Right.
Sure.
And as long as you think it's not going to pass and it's just a protest vote, and then everyone tells you it's non-binding, why not? Why not kick it out?
Sure.
And it turns out, yes, I actually asked Andy, what does non-binding mean in England anyway? And it turns out, yeah, it's kind of like voting for Donald Trump as your nominee.
Sure.
You know, it doesn't really count, right? You're just telling the Republican establishment that you're unhappy, except that then he really is the nominee and the party can't do anything about it. So... this vote is the will of the people, and any member of parliament who goes against that is going against democracy. You know, it's not... I wrote an article about this and got some grief about it. I know I've mentioned this before on the podcast, about Boaty McBoatface.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
If you're naming a boat and you just name it Boaty McBoatface, a wiser, smarter hand can come in and say, well, we thank you very much for your...
Yeah.
For your contribution, Internet, but we're not going to name it Boaty McBoatface. We're going to name it something else.
You think that people would have learned the lesson from Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
Where Leslie Knope put the vote for the town motto up on the Internet so people could vote on it.
And there was a write-in option. Right?
And there was a write-in option because that's how democracy works. And the shock jocks got it to be like the town with a stick that's up Leslie Knope's butt. And it got it, you know, stick butt. But it was just, you know, it was, oh, let's let the mob have a say over things.
Yeah.
Because that's how democracy works. And surprise, surprise, Rupert Murdoch has been hard at work in Great Britain all these years and hard at work in America all these years and has created a mob that is certainly not large enough to take over the country. Mm-hmm. But it is large enough to wreck the country if they all get pointed in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. It was, I was listening to, this is going to sound a little bit off topic, but I promise you it's not. I was driving around the other day listening to Michael Smirkanish, as I almost never do, because, oh God.
I love muting Michael Smirkanish.
Yeah. Anyway. Michael, first person pronoun. You know, that reminds me of the story about me. You know,
reminds me of that Rolling Stones concert I went to. Was it the one in 76 or the one in 81? Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah,
you
okay.
Know, me and Ronald Reagan once said, no, you didn't know, and I don't care. Because every story is not about you fucking Michael Smirkanish. But Michael Smirkanish was talking, was sort of pleading the case for CNN and Donald Trump. He was saying, well, look, CNN was in the toilet. They brought in Jeff Zucker, and his job was to get eyeballs. He wanted people to call in and talk about the fact that, look, the media is just reporting on this phenomena, and maybe there's something they should do about it, maybe there's something they shouldn't, but it's news, and they're responsible, and they point a camera at it, and that's whatever. At no point in his setting the table for his little radio debate did he mention the ethical responsibility of the company.
Yes, to tell the truth.
to you can point a camera at a Donald Trump podium all you want. But at some point, you have to start talking about the fact that Donald Trump is a fascist and his followers are thugs and bigots and idiots.
Who are voting for fascism.
But you can't say that, because his argument was, look, it's a business. Mm-hmm. And the business of CNN is to get as many eyeballs as possible and keep them as long
the
as
the end.
Possible.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, then why don't you just show porn?
Yeah.
Why don't you just show porn?
That'll get a lot of eyeballs.
Yeah, porn, public executions, and kittens. Because people love those.
Well, and page 3 of a lot of the British tabloids does show tits. I mean, that's part of why you buy that paper and so it's on the inside of the fold. So you have to buy it to look at the tits, right?
It's network. There's Crazy Raving Guy, and there's the horoscope reader. There's Madam What's-Her-Name, and then there's the public, then there's the terrorist.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're just going to keep running this loop over and over again because that's what people will watch.
Yeah.
But again, at no point did it even occur to him to talk about why you do this.
Mm-hmm.
What? Because you're not news anymore. You are simply a marketing arm of a corporation that wants to get the maximum number of people in front of the tube so you can sell them penis cream and reverse mortgages.
Yeah.
So say that. Quit pretending you're a news organization. But here's the thing. If your media is in a completely dysfunctional, codependent relationship with your fascists, that's a story.
Yeah. Or if you're going to take a fascist and a run-of-the-mill politician who has serious flaws and say, well, both sides. And, you know, Hitler and who shall we say? Everett Dirksen.
Yeah.
Are the same. Let's report the controversy. Yeah.
So, the larger question is, at what point, if the media is complicit with the worst people in your country, if they're in this incestuous relationship with horrible people because of ratings, then whose job is it to report on the dysfunction of that thing going on in front of them? Because everyone's involved. Everyone's at the orgy. There's no one left outside the orgy to do the job of journalism, which is, holy shit, the corporate media and the fascists they created and enabled and empowered are wrecking the country. That's a really big story, but we don't have a media who report that story because they're all at the orgy screwing the dwarf and drinking wine.
Yep.
So
and Donald Trump is pushing the envelope on how the media can stay in that safe space because every time he goes off script, and this is why the story is, why can't Donald Trump stay on script so that we can stay in our safe space and simply report the controversy and report he said, she said on the election, because when he goes after the judge in his court case and says, when I'm president, won't it be fun to come from the Oval Office and watch this judge quake in his boots with me having the power of the presidency for my personal court case, you know, which is unconstitutional and fascist and just evil, the media can't stay in their safe zone of, oh, we'll just point a camera and comment rather than have to take a side.
Yeah.
And this is why the CNN panel has, you know, multiple orgasms anytime Donald Trump simply reads from a teleprompter.
Right. Because
then, it's safe. We can now just say, oh, look, he read from his speech. So that means he's presidential. And that's the only qualification. That says so much about the Republican Party, too, and what they stand for.
Oh, it does.
If you read the prepared speech from a bunch of summer interns at the Heritage Foundation, you're absolutely presidential. They don't stand for anything anymore.
No.
Except for deregulation and tax cuts for billionaires. And so it really is the bar is I think Andy from The New Yorker, Andy Borowitz, said something about there is no longer a bar lowering to go. The bar is as low as it will go as far as this is for Donald Trump. I want to bring up two things, Driftglass, that relate totally to what you just said.
Okay.
About the media and how I want to bring up two things, Strickglass, that relate directly to what you said about the mob. One is this reaction that Hillary Clinton had to the terrorist attack in Turkey and the reaction that Donald Trump had.
Right.
Hillary Clinton took a few hours, wrote a statement that acknowledged that Turkey is one of our allies, acknowledged the tragedy of the deaths, expressed sympathy and resolve to help Turkey in their investigation of this, in finding justice for this, in anything that we could do as a country. I mean, this is Secretary of State, right?
Uh-huh.
Our ally was hurt in this situation. We want to help. They are an ally. We express sympathy for them and want this we want to be a partner to them.
Right.
End of story. Donald Trump's tweet was, "We must do everything possible to keep this horrible terrorism outside the United States."
Yeah.
That was his statement.
Yeah.
And, of course, that ignores the issue of, all of the Bundy boys who were in the United States in jail, right?
Yep.
How many terrorists have killed Americans who are homegrown white male Americans? You know, Timothy McVeigh, you're not going to keep him out of the United States, right? That it just doesn't work, Donald. And then the other thing I want you to talk about, too, is when the mob turns on the people that have cultivated them.
Right.
As happened with Trey Gowdy this week. So,
They cultivate them and they fear them.
Yeah.
This is John Fugelsang talks about both the media and the Republican establishment as the drunk frat girl at the party.
Saying,
please lie to me. Please lie to me and tell me, you know, whatever. Tell me whatever. Tell me what I want to hear. I'll go upstairs and fuck you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're very clear about that. So the Republican establishment has such contempt for its voters and such contempt for this country that it is now openly saying, please, oh, bigoted, racist, asshole, motherfucker, just read what's on the 3x5 index card, and then we can drop trowel and go upstairs with you. Just mm-hmm. say this thing for me, because that's what you're supposed to do. That's what, you know, that's everyone's job at Fox is to read what Roger Ailes tells them to read.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to be a prostitute. Your job is a hooker. Your job is to tell the mob what they want to hear. And right now, the mob is a larger group of people than the 18 to 20 million bigots and imbeciles who are Republican-based voters. So now you have to change your index card from Barack Obama's a secret Kenyan terrorist to mm-hmm. we want to deregulate things and cut taxes and I love America, and you need to be marginally more presidential. You just change your costume and come out and work a different side of the room. And Donald Trump won't do that.
Yeah.
And it's freaking them out because suddenly everyone's looking at them going, why are you so intent on pretending that this guy is something other than he is? And it's because if we start reporting the story honestly, we lose half of our audience.
Yep.
The half of the Republicans who will occasionally hang out at CNN because Jeffrey Lord will get on there and tell them something or Angeline Sugar Tits will come on and shake her hair and go, Donald Trump's the greatest guy I've ever met in my life, and he's a genius, will go away.
Yeah.
If you start talking about the fact that the Republican Party, the problem with this country is the Republican Party, and the problem with the Republican Party is it's full of Republicans, you lose half your audience. Jeff Zucker gets fired that day.
Yep.
So does Michael Smirkanish, and so does everyone else at CNN. And the Republican establishment just gets overrun, and that's exactly what happened to Trey Gowdy.
Yeah.
They've been feeding this crocodile for years. They've been telling these batshit crazy, heavily armed lunatics one comforting lie after another, after another, after another, and promising them a big payday. And a big payday was going to be Benghazi.
Right.
That's why they held seven fucking hearings on this thing. And the seventh hearing came out, and there was nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
And the mob turned on Trey Gowdy.
Big time.
There's a little group called the Citizens Commission on Benghazi, and apparently it's staffed with gun nuts, birchers, ex-Klansmen, and Jack Ripper from Dr.
And they have funding. And they have funding, right?
They have money. And there's a bunch of retired admirals, you know, because they're never crazy. And a bunch of former CIA guys who know the real story. And, of course, the real story is that Sidney Blumenthal helped Hillary Clinton turn Barack Obama over to the Muslim Brotherhood to sell out the country. And that's why they sat around the Situation Room cackling and laughing as Americans died while they watched, because that was the whole plot. Well, apparently Trey Gowdy, who has spent $7 million in 2 years, longer than any other hearing for anything ever, didn't find that. And so, because there is no biological mechanism left in the conservative brain that will force them to use the words, I was wrong, there's only one alternative when it turns out the conspiracy theory that you have been jerking off to for years isn't true. The only answer could possibly be, well, is that the conspiracy goes even deeper than we ever imagined. So obviously, it wasn't just Sidney Blumenthal and Hillary Clinton and the ghost of God knows who and Abraham Lincoln and the rest of the world that's conspiring against them. But obviously, Trey Gowdy was in on it, too. Yes. Trey Gowdy, and I quote, notably refrained from assigning blame or demanding accountability. Claire Lopez, Center for Security Policy and advisor to Ted Cruz's presidential campaign, told The Gather, I think he had his reasons. Political. McInerney, some asshole on this committee, said. He speculated. Of course, speculation equals fact among the 18 to 20 million lunatics that Donald Trump entertains every day and who are currently running the Republican Party. That the congressional leadership had approved, quote, black operations to run weapons from Benghazi to the Islamic State forces in Syria.
It had to be. It had to be a black op. It had to be.
That's the dirty little secret that nobody wants out, he said. And I guarantee you, if you have a crazy Uncle Liberty in your life, and we all do, your email box will be full of this hate porn in the next week or two. Because There is no mechanism among these people other than the fucking graveyard in which they will ever change their mind about anything.
They'll turn on a dime on a person like Trey Gowdy, boom, the next day, because they cannot fail. They can only be failed.
And
right?
they cannot, it is impossible. Again, once upon a time, it was probably the case that Republicans could admit they were wrong about things. But those people have all been centrifuged out of the party. What's left are nothing, literally nothing left in the Republican Party, but bigots, imbeciles, neo-fascists, and people whose fortunes depend on exploiting, cynically, bigots, imbeciles, and neo-fascists. That's it. Now, the people who make fortunes, both financial and ratings fortunes, off of exploiting these morons, are CNN and Fox News and the Republican establishment. But we've run out of crazy to feed them. There's no more conspiracy goodies on the shelf. They've all been used up, and it turns out they were all empty calories. They didn't come to anything. They never impeached Bill Clinton. They never caught Barack Obama secretly conspiring to destroy America. They never caught Hillary Clinton cackling in the ready room over the death of Americans. Everything they've jerked off to has turned out to be a lie. And therefore, when confronted with the unimpeachable fact that everything they believe is bullshit, they have no choice but to go as deep as they can, to throw in with an obvious lunatic and a fascist like Donald Trump. And the media.
Well, speaking of Alex Jones and Roger Stone, I thought this was an interesting development, and I want to hat tip Bob and Chez, because they brought this to the front of their podcast last week, of Alex Jones and Roger Stone talking about going to Cleveland and wearing ball gags as a protest against being silenced to protect Donald Trump supporters and so forth. And it was a real mismatch of why are they going to do this? And it was clear that Alex Jones and Roger Stone just wanted to wear ball gags in front of each other. But that's beside the point. What got me and the thing that was sort of threaded through their conversation that you might have missed if you didn't listen carefully is Roger Stone and Alex Jones talking about Orlando and saying this. I thought this was so interesting, saying that gay marriage is settled law. And so now that Orlando has happened, all of the gays will be moving toward Donald Trump.
He's got
and
all
voting
of
for Trump. Because they're now going to be interested in national security and security for their people and making sure that they have guns. And so it's really, you know, this is an opportunity for Donald Trump because gay marriage is settled law now. We're not fighting on that front. These gays are going to vote for Trump because they were attacked. Mm-hmm. And the weaving that takes, you know, the threads in that fabric are so complex.
Well, they're also going to get 25% of the blacks.
25% of the blacks are, you know, it's total victory.
It's total victory.
Alex Jones.
Total victory. We're going to have total victory.
All the gays, 25% of the blacks. The Republican Party can only get 10% of the blacks, but Donald Trump gets 25% of the blacks. Total victory. Total victory. And Roger Stone, who has three giant pictures of Nixon pasted to the back of his wall, like some Andy Warhol display, saying, You're right, Alex. Get your gag ready. We're going to Cleveland. The backwardsness of accepting gay marriage as settled law because now Donald Trump gets all the gay votes is remarkable. All right. What do you want to talk about next, Drift Glass?
Well, I was going to mention a little bit about the tribe that rubs shit in its hair.
Uh-huh.
Because you might remember that there was a DJ this week, a North Carolina, I believe. No, I'm sorry, not North Carolina. I'm looking it up right now. Howie Carr.
Oh, yes. Howie Carr, who went and introduced Donald Trump in Maine.
Yes. Who was a right-wing radio lunatic who was introducing, warming up the crowd with Donald Trump and introduced Elizabeth Warren with that big old war whoop, you know, because Pocahontas. And the
crowd, let's not miss the fact that Donald Trump is campaigning in Maine.
Right, right.
All right.
There are four more white votes he might be able to get up there. But for those of you who don't know, I have a longstanding theory called the tribe that rubs shit in its hair. It's very simple. There's a tribe of people, we call them Republicans, who live in a cave with each other. And they have developed this habit, this trait, this ritual among each other of taking their poo and rubbing it in their hair. And they make big, complicated sculptures out of their hair poo. And they make big sailing ships. And occasionally they shape it into a tricorn hat and pretend that they're Tea Party members. But basically, they're just a bunch of idiots living in a cave rubbing shit in their hair. And because the only people they ever talk to are fellow morons, they think what they're doing is brilliant. They think it's awesome. And then occasionally they come out in public and they wonder why people run away from them and why they tell their children, don't look, honey. He's a smelly, crazy man with shit in his hair.
Well, and Donald Trump asked his audience this week, why am I not doing better in the polls? I think it's because people are shy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're shy. They don't want to talk about how much they love you. So, but this guy is Howie Carr. Is sort of exhibit A in the tribe that rubs shit in their hair. He went out on stage in front of a whole bunch of people on camera and did this. Pocahontas, isn't that funny? Now, the thing that shocks and horrifies people, that completely baffled all the people covering this story for the media, quote unquote, was, holy shit.
Yeah.
What's with this guy? I mean, why would he do a thing like this? And the answer is really simple. The answer, if you actually talked to the audience, if you ever actually went out and talked to Republicans.
Turn the camera on them.
You'll find that these people think that is the height of wit.
Yep.
This is their Algonquin fucking round table.
And that is why, by the way, you might not know this because it was in the news this morning. Donald Trump came out and told Howie Carr, don't you dare apologize for that.
That's right.
We are proudly politically incorrect.
Right.
And that's what gets these voters excited is, no, he's not going to apologize. No. America. Right.
He's Oscar fucking Wilde. It's brilliant. Yeah. It's genius. He's an actor genius. And these people have been really, I mean, they have been debased to the point where they will laugh at some guy in blackface. I'm waiting for someone to come out in blackface with a mannequin of Hillary Clinton and do some Amos and Andy routine, and they will howl and shit themselves with delight.
Yep.
Because
yep.
politically correct used to mean there's some things that are kind of sensitive that we have trouble talking about, so we invent weak language to talk about, which I think is bullshit. We shouldn't do that. We should have big, uncomfortable conversations about the things that are wrong in our country. But PC, you got to understand, PC to the bigots, to the assholes, to the Republicans in this world, simply means once upon a time, there are certain groups I can shit all over. I can call people faggots. I can call them the N-word. I can grab women's ass and get away with it. I could call intellectuals pointy-headed assholes. I could
beat and rape my wife and it was legal.
It was fine. Yep. I got to do all that shit because, God damn it, that's my goddamn natural right. And now all those people are calling me stupid and misogynist and xenophobic and racist to my face. How dare they? And they're getting away with it, too. So what they think of as PC, you and I understand as freedom of expression, the First Amendment. I applaud Howie Carr for coming out and dropping his pants and showing his ass to the world, because that's how the Republican Party is going to be buried. It's going to be buried in a grave right between Lee Atwater and Bull Connor.
Yeah.
With their ass up in the air, drowning in their own Kool-Aid. That's how they're going to die. That's how the Republican Party is going to perish. But I wouldn't want anyone to interrupt Howie Carr making a complete racist ass of himself on stage on behalf of the largest asshole in American history ever to run for president.
Right.
And he's qualified. I want him to do that. Right. What they don't understand is, and this is, again, getting back to the problem with our media, people like this were never a problem. People like Rush Limbaugh were never a problem for the mainstream media until liberals started punching back.
Right.
Until liberals started calling Rush Limbaugh out as a giant bomb-throwing racist pig. And that's when it got ugly. That's when PC culture, they're trying to shut us down. They're trying. No, we're not trying to shut you down. We think you have the right to say any fucking thing you want, Rush and Howie and Donald.
And we have the right to tell corporations that sponsor you that we will not buy your product because we think it's hateful. We think it's hate speech. Yep.
Then you can go have a podcast.
Then it's a fight in the marketplace, right?
But
right.
We don't want you to stop. We want no restrictions on your ability to say whatever you want. But again, they are confusing the fact that they're angry, bigoted white male privilege is getting slapped around by groups who would never dare do that in the past. And for them, that is completely unacceptable. That is a sign that America's going to hell in a handbasket. To them, that's PC. No, it's not that we can't talk about it. It's that that those people are going to talk back now. And that's what you can't tolerate. Because once they start talking back, you are exposed as the ignorant buffoons that you always have been. And how completely unfit. It's not just Donald Trump. The entire Republican Party is unfit to hold any elected office anywhere at the national level.
Yeah.
And that's what they don't want to talk about. That's the entire system is built to avoid having that conversation. Because at the end of that conversation, some very, very important people are going to be unemployed.
Yep.
And they don't want that to happen. So my applause to Howie Carr for getting out
showing it. Let your freak flag fly, Howie.
Yeah.
So everybody can see exactly who is cheering you and why. Yeah. Hey, Driftglass, I want to help Donald Trump and Reince Priebus out a little bit.
Yeah.
They're having a hard time finding any speakers for the Republican National Convention.
Yes.
Even Mike Ditka said no.
No. And Mike
he's going to be busy.
Mike Ditka never says no. Never says no. He will take a speaking gig on an in-flight movie telling you how to get out of the exits safe.
Well, I went over to a website called the Washington Speakers Bureau, which is an agency for Washingtonian types who do speeches for money.
Yeah.
And they represent people like David Gergen. And they represent, I'm trying to think who else, the guy who used to host Meet the Press.
David Gregory.
David Gregory. Yeah, they represent David Gregory. They represent a lot of these kind of pundit class people. And they also represent a few head coaches for the NFL who would give an inspirational speech to your business group. You can get the $15,000 tier or the $40,000 and up tier.
Sure.
You can have, for a lot of money, you can have Mrs. Greenspan come and speak to your group. You can have Joe Scarborough come and speak to your group. I mean, there's if you have enough money, you can hire these guys to come and give a speech. And they tell you on the website the speech that they have three or four speeches that they could give to you. Uh-huh. Chris Matthews is on their list. So
sure.
Come and talk about politics for, you know, to the 92nd Street Y or any group that you have that has the money. This is how it's done. And I went through the pundit class people who might be available. And boy, there's a lot who I'm sure would never show up to this convention. You know, like there are a lot of Republican people who are not, you know, none of the Bushes are going to be there.
Nope.
No former president's going to be there. No, Mitt Romney's not going to be there. John McCain's not going to be there.
Nope.
A lot of senatorial candidates in the Republican Party have somewhere else to go. You were telling me somebody planned a trip to Israel.
Uh-huh.
During the RNC, one of the senatorial candidates for the Republican mm-hmm. Party is going to be out of the country.
And that Hugh Hewitt Cruz is booked solid. Solid.
The Hugh Hewitt and the conservative cruises that I like to look at are the ones that are going on in January
yeah.
of next year. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you're not planning to be at the inauguration. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Thank you. That's the early line. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that you gave it away. You didn't realize you gave it away. But I thought about, how about Alex Castellanos?
Oh, he'd be great.
His speech is called The Secret Laws of Politics and How They Help Candidates and Companies Win.
Uh-huh.
Take a crash executive level course in, quote, how to win, unquote. A political campaign with Alex Castellanos, dubbed a new style media master by Fortune Magazine.
Fortune Magazine said that. Why, it must be true. Yeah.
What is, quote unquote, strategy?
Yeah.
And how do great campaigns create it? These are the secret weapons of political success it has taken Castellanos over 30 years to learn.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Lighthearted and insightful. You'll never forget the laws of politics, and you will learn how to win. And you will never look at politics the same way again. I think that's the perfect speech.
Oh, he'd be great.
The RNC.
I think Scott Delanos will whip his glasses off and say, hello. Scott Delanos. Let me speak into your ear about the secret laws of politics.
Hey,
and next up is a young up-and-comer named Niccolo Machiavelli, who will teach you about the secret laws of Medici politics. Poison your enemies. Terrify your opponents. Pardon me?
The blurb on Hugh Hewitt's book about Hillary Clinton called The Queen compares Hugh Hewitt to Niccolo Machiavelli.
Yeah. Well, they both...
know, because they're the same person, right?
Yeah. They both wore the same size shoe, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Hey, Driftglass.
Yeah.
It's time for Bible Bitch.
Well, you know, I just want to say before we leave the Hugh Hewitt, you know my theory that Hugh Hewitt is a cyborg sent from the future to destroy America.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
His
human suit is not always working.
Yes. No, he is impossible to take seriously because of the crazy things he says. But watching him try to imitate human facial expressions is very entertaining. Anyway,
yeah.
I believe the next thing up is Bible Bitch, Blue Gal.
Yeah. Hey, Driftglass, it's time for Bible Bitch.
I love Bible Bitch.
Yay. We're going to look at Romans 12 today, Romans 12:2, and I'm just going to read three versions of it.
Or 12 Romans.
No, it's not 12 Romans.
Romans?
That's only Donald Trump's Bible.
12 Romans.
Twelve Romans. It's the best, right? It's the greatest. Yeah,
it's the best suite at all the Trump casinos. You can get a 12 Romans suite for $35,000 a night. The hooker of your choice will come
we
and treat you.
We didn't even talk about Trump's golf course at all, or the Nazi golf balls.
It's been a long and fascinating week, boys and girls.
You know, I'm seriously, and I mean this in all seriousness, the only way to succeed against this monster is ridicule.
Yeah.
And the guy who handed out Nazi golf balls at Donald Trump's speech knew how to do it.
Yeah.
And you just have to keep on repeat what he says and take it to its logical conclusion and go from there. But I want to get back to liberals and what we liberals need to do to stay sane
yes.
in this next 5-6 months. And Paul's letter to the Romans has 12 in chapter 12, verse 2. I'm going to read a couple versions because all of them say something the same but different in a way that I think is elucidating. Is that a word?
Yeah. It is now.
So the King James Version of Romans 12, verse 2 says, Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God.
Yeah, it's got a lot of big words in it. I don't understand.
And the Message, which is the Bible in modern English language.
Says, the hippie Bible. Excellent.
The hippie Bible says, don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings out the best of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. And then the Living Bible, which is sort of sometimes a sort of right-wing version of the Message, I think. It certainly predates the Message by a few years, but it's also the Bible in modern English. Says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but be a new and different person with a fresh newness in all you do and think. Then you will learn from your own experience how his ways will really satisfy you. And I just wanted to reinforce that getting depressed and thinking that everything is going to hell is sort of an all or nothing thinking that we've talked about before, that may appear to the immature mind to be appearing smart because we always think that it's Pollyanna-ish to be positive and well, that is less intelligent.
Let me just also include a category of people that I'm included in, which is the exhausted mind.
Yeah.
You run and run and run, and you just the season, the politics and the crazy runs you down.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to fall into that all or nothing thinking.
Yeah. Okay. Everything has just gone to hell. I can't fight this anymore.
Yep.
Right. And so I just wanted to point out a couple of things that happened this week that balance out some of the shit that we've had to go through. The Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Let's start with the best thing.
Yeah. The very best thing.
Not only did the Supreme Court decide correctly in the Texas abortion case, but the notorious RBG.
Yep.
Wrote a concurrence, and so did Kennedy, by the way. I think Kennedy may have written the decision. I'm not clear about that. But the decision and the concurrences made it really clear in, it is now stated jurisprudence that abortion is safe.
Yes.
And that's really important because the whole arguments that have been made in state legislatures has been, we're protecting women. We're protecting women's health.
Yes.
And by stating it very clearly in their decision, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg did this very consciously, saying, uh-huh. you know, compared to a colonoscopy, abortion is very safe. And you cannot, there is no reason on God's green earth to legislate safety regulations for abortion clinics that you don't regulate other surgical procedures or non-surgical procedures.
Uh-huh.
It's just unnecessary. And that, she did that for a reason.
Let me just put it this way for our non-judicial audience. Judicial precedent is a snowbank, and she just peed her name into it.
She did.
Forever, for all time.
Forever.
That's
it's frozen.
It. We're done.
Yep. You can't use the. And now, you know, Planned Parenthood and the Planned Parenthood Action Committee and NARAL are all going to court against all of these laws. There's 10 states that have done it. There's some other states that put a hold on these kind of laws until the court decided what to do.
Yep.
And these regulations on abortion clinics are going away. Now, that does not mean that these laws have not had a negative effect. These
yes.
abortion clinics that closed are going to have a really hard time reopening. You and I have talked about this, that when you shut down a program, whether it's a government program or a health program or a Planned Parenthood program, you are destroying the
network,
the structure, the network, yeah. the infrastructure of that organization. And other people go off and have to find other jobs, and they do that, and they don't come back. And so there is harm that has been done, but hopefully that can be reversed. And in the meantime, SCOTUS did a very good thing this week.
They did.
A federal judge on the Mississippi court told Mississippi, get with it, marry gay people, send an order. The judge ordered the state government to send an order to every county clerk, all 82 of them in Mississippi, and saying, you have to marry gay people. Not you don't get a religious test for that. You don't get. And the thing that I thought was really significant about this is they said you cannot adjudicate this with every legislative session.
Right.
You can't just keep passing laws to mess up and gum up the works. And this is something that conservatives do, is kind of to put a hold on things or try to push it away. Is we're going to pass this law. We know it's unconstitutional. But in the meantime, we'll have 18 months of screwing it up. And I thought it was interesting that the Trump's people, the evangelical committee that he has, made a statement along those lines of saying, we know that in the next administration, this won't happen, as if Ruth Bader Ginsburg's words aren't for all time and eternity in coded law. You know, that is the point.
This was reaching, again,
this is a Supreme Court ruling.
For the non-judicial, this is reaching into the back seat during a car trip and saying, stop it. I'm pulling this car.
And you're done. We'll pull this car over. Yeah.
We're done.
Yeah.
We're done. Fucking with you people, we are done with that.
Yep. We have a openly gay contestant in the Miss America pageant. Miss Missouri won her state pageant. She is an openly gay person. And you might think, well, you know, perhaps gay people shouldn't participate in the Miss America pageant. But each candidate or each contestant in Miss America has to have an issue, a platform that they are advocating for, whether it's childhood nutrition or, you know, it's usually something very non-controversial.
The greatness of America.
Greatness. Well, you know, like highway beautification would be one, you know, that kind of thing. Miss Missouri's platform is preventing gay suicide among teenagers. And she is advocating for a group called the Trevor Project. I do recommend people Google that. Trevor Project. It is a national hotline for gay and lesbian youth, GLBTQ youth, to call and get help if they're feeling suicidal. She was on Good Morning America talking about how gay teenagers are 8 times more likely to commit suicide than a non-gay teenager. And this group, the Trevor Project, doesn't just work on having this hotline. They also work on training programs for schools and other youth programs, youth administrators, people that work with young people to prevent bullying, to recognize the signs of suicide, to recognize when a child or teen is dropping out of social and a social environment because of depression. She is really advocating in a very vocal way in public for this issue. And that is a very good thing. It's really awesome that she's doing that. Driftglass, the ozone hole is actually closing.
Really?
Yes, it really is.
Well, that's one gaping hole that's closing on this planet.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Scientists say it will take till at least 2050 to return to a quote-unquote normal level, but it's moving in the right direction. And that is the work of international treaties. Leaders who are conscious of science. And we can be grateful for that.
All of our treaties are bad. They're negotiated by idiots. Everyone knows that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a 21-year-old has set up and he is from Holland, I believe, the Netherlands, has set up a working prototype. He does call it Boomy McBoomface. It is a boom that goes across the ocean and has a filter underneath it that filters pollution, solid pollution, out of the oceans. The prototype is working. It has survived 30K winds. They have a camera on it and they're watching it. It is working. This kid, his Twitter stream, he says, yes, I got a degree in astrophysics and now I'm a cleaner. Yeah, you're cleaning up the oceans, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the youth of this person has been noted of, you know, somebody so young came up with this amazing invention that, you know, sounds like something that a kid would come up with. Why don't we just filter it out?
Right.
But he had the knowledge, the scientific knowledge, as an astrophysicist to say, no, there are ways we can do that. And his prototype for now, keep fingers crossed, is working.
Yeah.
And congratulations to him. Congratulations to everyone who's funded that. And so we have a working prototype for cleaning the oceans. And even if it fails, even if it doesn't turn out to be everything we hope it can be, It's a step.
Yeah.
And isn't that wonderful?
And there are people who care enough to work on these things.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah. The 99 failures that they have when they try things don't make headlines.
Cylindra.
Yeah. Yeah. But the shame is that 1% of the successes don't make a lot of headlines either. And this one does and should. And those sorts of things should. The idea that there is a plane circling the Earth right now powered by solar power going to make a global flight powered by the sun. Mm-hmm. The fact that Tesla's self-driving car, someone just died in one. Well, okay, that's a bad thing. But it also means we're moving very, very close to having electric-powered self-driving vehicles. People are working on that. There are forces for good in this world that are working really hard to try to make sure our screw-ups are not fatal. And to them, I am very grateful.
Yep.
Would you like me to share with you my counterintuitive Clinton plane strategy or no?
We're ending on such a high note.
Yes. Well, this is my high note.
Bill Clinton's an idiot?
No, he's a genius. Bill Clinton's a
genius. He's a genius.
Look.
Well, all right. If you do it in the voice of Bill Clinton, I'll let you do it.
All right. Okay. Well, here's the deal. So I'll introduce it in my voice.
Go ahead.
If Ross Douthat and Megan McArdle and Jonathan Chait can make a living being counterintuitive sometimes, you know, the counterfactuals on this are somewhat different than you might imagine. You know, in a bizarre universe, there's a scenario where this all makes perfect sense. Then I can come up with a theory that, you know, here's the problem. A goddamn Donald Trump made one good speech about trade. We got to get him the fuck off of the headline. We got to get him the hell out of the headline. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pull up next to Loretta's plane, get on her plane. I'm going to talk about her grandkids for 10 minutes. Right-wing media is going to freak the fuck out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they did. And a lot of Democrats, let's be clear. Yeah, but let's be clear. A lot of Democrats freaked out, too.
Sure, of course
this really was a stupid move.
Oh, it was an incredibly stupid move. But in the theoretical alternate counterfactual universe, it was a genius move. It was, look, here's what I'll do. Because you can make everything that people hate or like about Hillary is baked in the cake.
Yeah, I think that is true.
Those numbers are simply not going to budge much. There's a couple of, five people in the middle who are like, I don't really know. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, I just don't know. But those people are idiots, so don't worry about them. But you can make wingnuts twice as mad, but that doesn't mean they get twice as many votes just because they're twice as mad as they were yesterday. Mm-hmm. So the best possible strategy for the Clinton campaign is every time Donald Trump starts to read off a teleprompter, do something that will drive him crazy. And it will drive conservative media crazy. We'll send them into a foaming frenzy of conspiracy. Let's start another hearing. Because at the end of the day, the only people who give a shit about that are the same people who hated her at the beginning of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think you're polishing a turd here, Dirk Glass.
Totally,
I just want to say that.
Look how well I'm polishing it, Lucas.
Yeah, okay.
By the way, there is a pundit contest apparently at Netroots Nation.
You're going to sign up for that, Dirk Glass.
So I'm just doing my practice rounds now.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, okay, I'm in the spin room. I'm spinning like a spinach.
Okay. Yep. All right. All right. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Pork Chop, and it's a perfect name for pork chop. Pork Chop is a ham. You got to see this picture. Bathing beauty Pork Chop lying in the sun. You'll just love it. Go visit Pork Chop at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. We did get a letter this week, Drift Glass, from a lady who has discovered our podcast recently, said, I love your podcast. I love everything about it. I have no money, but I'm going to send you $5, and thank you for doing it. And I thought, that is just the perfect response.
Thank you.
You've done everything you need to do at that point.
Yeah.
That's it. She said, I can buy you a coffee. Okay, $5. Here you go. And that's it. So we thank you for that. And really, that is as much as we can expect from any of our listeners. We consider it a miracle every dollar that is sent to us, mm-hmm. And are grateful that you appreciate us enough to support us with a contribution. Thank you for doing that. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local. We also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. I want to say happy Canada Day. We are recording this on Friday, July 1st, which is Canada Day. And happy Canada Day to all our Canadian listeners. Happy Independence Day to our U.S. listeners. Mm-hmm. And love and kisses to our Brit listeners. We are thinking of you.
We're pulling for you.
We're pulling for you. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or give us a thumbs up at Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that.
So, Blue Gal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
The Internet Kitties are looking forward to joining the RNC Speakers Bureau for their usual fee.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2016, Drift Glass, Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Drift Glass.
Science Fiction University, we are reading more of your submissions this week. We have two stories, two beginnings of stories. These are four paragraphs long. That's what we ask for. These are summer vacation or summer wedding, June wedding stories. The first one is a wedding story.
All right.
And it is sent to us by Eric, and I will read it. Mm-hmm. So here we go. The story is called Flip, Flop, and Fly. My mother once told me that I'd probably have to kiss a frog to find my prince. I can only imagine what she'd say if she saw me standing here in front of a pan-sapiens priest beside a 9-foot Batrachian telepath from star system 37 light years away. Okay, I can't imagine what she'd say. It really doesn't matter. I wouldn't be able to hear her, as I'm not only standing beside my froggy friend, I'm locked inside his mind. All I can hear are the sounds of the swamp on the planet he calls Eknarthagol, or Nerts. I don't know, it seems very clear in my head, but unpronounceable. The swamp seems nice, though. It's warm, but not muggy. There's a gentle breeze and a scent reminiscent of magnolia blossoms. I'm anxious to begin, but as I have to wait for Tom to arrive, this place is pleasant enough. 60 years ago, Tom and I set out for the fourth planet orbiting Glissy 86A. Unfortunately, we were compelled against advice to take separate ships. Still, we calculated we would both arrive at about the same time. We would awaken from induced hibernation, find ourselves a patch, get married, and start our new lives together under the Inter-System Homestead Act. As I'm sure you've guessed, things haven't worked out as planned. Tom's ship arrived at our chosen destination about a month ago. Mine was disabled by a swarm of black pinholes. Our navigation systems were destroyed. We drifted aimlessly for 54 years until the giant frogs towed our now useless hull to one of their outer colonies. It was a rescue that the majority of our party embraced, but that I greeted with mixed emotions. Not that this planet isn't suitable for humans, it is. It's lovely and unspoiled, if a bit damp, and has plenty of room for us. It certainly could have been worse. But where the rest of our party is made up of families, I landed here without Tom. It is a tenet of the Extranian Settlements Movement that we make the best of what we find wherever we find it. After all, once you've traveled more than a few light years, your options are pretty much reduced to degrees of survivability. If you get a chance to flourish, you take it. The frogs understand this and have welcomed us with open arms. They look enough like larger versions of creatures with which we are already familiar that we found it easy to accept their hospitality. We also learned that they are telepathic and would likely be able to tell if we resented them. So we made an effort at friendship, and they told us that there was a drier continent across a shallow sea that we could call our own. We thanked them, and while most celebrated our remarkably good fortune, I prepared myself for a melancholy but supportive role in founding a new society. It was in this mood, while absently skipping stones across a popular mudhole, that I was approached by the 9-foot amphibian into whose mind I have since trusted all my future hopes and dreams. "You are not happy?" indicated the frog. I say indicated because I couldn't hear him, but I know what he was asking me as though I had heard him. I shook my head. I was thinking about Tom. He smiled, I think. It's hard to tell with a frog. "You miss Tom?" the frog continued. "I have a way for you not to miss Tom." And Eric says, "Yes, I do know what happens next." So, good. Recall, I do like how this takes the princess and the frog, good. Or the princess kissing the frog story, and puts it into space. Very, very nice. Yeah. Yeah, yes. That's really nice. Yeah.
And literalizes it, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can see where it's going to. I have your picture of the 9-foot tall amphibian. Mm-hmm. And it's nice. The marsh, I can see where you're the swampland mm-hmm. is.
And all of the kind of the pioneer hippie Homestead Act stuff that's going on there. You kind of get who she is in very indirect ways, which is in the hands of a skilled writer really works. So that's how you want the reader to sort of pick up as you're going along. Oh, yeah. I see. She's this kind of person because there is a structure that she's obeying, but at the same time, she has to be a certain kind of person in order to agree to all of this. And so, very, very good. I look forward to reading the rest of it, Eric.
And I have a few suggestions, Eric.
Okay, go right ahead.
If you don't mind. The first is, and these are really picky editorial questions that a picky editor will ask when you send it in, right,
yes.
Eric?
Going
to say, "Oh, send this in." The first question I would ask as an editor is, how does our narrator know that Tom arrived a month ago? Is there faster-than-light communication? Are they in contact somehow? How is she so sure that he got where he's going? Are they chatting? If they're chatting, are they chatting about stuff? Has Tom aged 50 years and she has not? And my second question is more basic than that, is you'll have to take the sentence where, "unfortunately, we were compelled to take separate ships," and really, really explain that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because interstellar travel is not cheap. The way you have it described here, ships are going out once a month. And it's no big thing to take the next one like it's a train. And I just can't believe that's true. So you need to invent a reason why they couldn't be on the same ship,
mm-hmm.
other
mm-hmm.
than they just were compelled to.
Mm-hmm.
Do they work in the same department? Mm. You know, there are rules against, for example, when the president is giving the State of the Union address, you can't have everyone in line of succession
right.
in the same room.
Right.
There are reasons why people would have to take separate ships, but they're pioneers or colonists, and they're married or going to be married, or they're very close. And so the reason that took me out of the story, that was the
mm-hmm,
problem.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a really compelling reason why the two of them were forced to not take the same ship.
Mm-hmm.
Are there different drives? Does one travel faster than the other? Is there a time dilation effect that they have to account for?
Mm-hmm.
Did Tom leave 10 years ago? But the technology has advanced to the point where you can travel faster than he can, and therefore you're catching up at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Is he Zefram Cochrane? Did he invent the warp drive? So that's the place where you have to add a paragraph or two explaining.
Mm-hmm.
And second, or third, rather, I would suggest striking the part where you say, as I'm sure you guessed.
Hmm.
That's a little bit of a direct address to me, the audience.
Yep. Yep.
So you don't need that at all.
Right. And then the other thing, since you're mentioning little things, although I don't think this is a little thing, I think it's important to clarify what happens to her brain when she is having telepathic communication with the frog husband, because she says that into whose mind I have since trusted all my future hopes and dreams. It's almost as if her consciousness is absorbed by the frog. And if that's the case, then how is she conscious of where Tom is? It's clear how the frog knows about Tom because he's reading all of her thoughts. So, and you and I both chuckled at that part about we agreed to be really nice to them because they could read everything we were thinking, you know?
Right.
So there's an element of almost danger there. Although these frogs are clearly benevolent at this point. But I can see a problem arising from having your thoughts read by giant frogs, you know, for the rest of your life. And you're going to be married to one of them. And so at what point does this kind of absorption become a problem? And also, how does it affect her knowledge of the world? And is she really smelling magnolias, or is that something that the frogs have given humans to make them feel more comfortable? You know, there's those kind of questions that I'm sure will be answered as the story progresses. But yes. Your question about how does she know about Tom is really an important part of the story. That's not a small item. That's really an issue for the story. And I do like the black pinholes. And the idea that would alter time in terms of how long it took her to get somewhere.
Well, or they were just knocked out.
Yep.
Their systems were blown out. They had a hulled by tiny black holes or whatnot. Mm-hmm. I don't think it affected their time. It just knocked out their engines.
Okay.
So they couldn't go anywhere.
So they were marooned for 60 years. Is that what you're
exactly.
saying?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Out there, and like Ripley in Aliens, just marooned out there, far away from anything for a long time. It would also strike me as if you do the second draft, and I hope you will, does a ship have an automatic distress beacon that goes off when it's something? Because most, you know, there are contingencies for bad things happening on board spacecraft.
Yeah, sure.
Being knocked out of, being knocked loose, because you'd continue on. I would imagine you'd continue on momentum, unless you don't fire your rockets all the way there. You fire them part of the way there, and you flip over and you decelerate as you come in. I guess depending on the kind of engines you have, but clearly you are off course and zooming along and stranded. And so is there some mechanism for attracting the attention of passing ships? And by the way, do humans know that there are extraterrestrials?
Yeah.
Because they seem really comfortable with waking up and finding a, you know, giant frog looking down at them, which is
giant
great.
Giant frog society, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But are humans even aware that there are other species out there? But anyway, those are all questions for the writer.
Yes.
And those are questions that I hope the writer will weave into his story that he will then take a second cut at and send it off to the magazine, Fantasy and Science Fiction or something like that. Because I like the idea and you're heading in the right direction.
Very cool. All right. The next submission is from Kay. It's called Children of Mars. And Driftglass, you're going to read this one?
Yes, I am. Like everyone else, I couldn't wait to get out of the classroom as soon as the chime sounded. School's out! Unlike most everybody else, I didn't head for the suit racks so I could celebrate the start of summer by hurrying outside to play. I found the nearest out-of-the-way spot where I could check on my work assignments without bumping into anybody. The thing I love most about summer is more time to do stuff that helps the colony, stuff that matters. My list came up. There was a lot of the usual stuff, shifts babysitting hydroponics and bioremediation systems, some basic cleanup and maintenance and the like. I felt a thrill of excitement when I saw that I'd be getting some shifts overseeing robo-rovers in the lava tubes, a chance to boldly rove where no one has roved before. Everybody was hoping that deep enough down there might still be thermal activity, maybe even life. Then I saw I was going to get a trial apprenticeship in the habitat design. I already had some ideas worked out. My symbiote handled most of the technical stuff while I, highest priority, news packet from Earth, view now? I eye-tracked to yes. As soon as it started, I knew everyone else in Alexandria and on Phobos and on the MCT Venture Star halfway here with the next batch of colonists would all be watching. There were images of a massive slab of Greenland's ice sheet plowing into the ocean, and before and after satellite imagery showing just how much had fallen. Then it got worse. Drone cam footage from the New England Republic, cities flattened by the tsunami, probably tens of millions dead. A half-meter sea level surge was sweeping around the Earth from displacement alone. There'd be more as icebergs melted. Headline: pop-ups said analysis of computer modeling data was predicted that the West Antarctic ice sheet would be floated enough to trigger its collapse. Somehow, the American Congress was going to have to order the evacuation of the South Atlantic and Gulf Coasts and probably the whole state of Florida without saying the words climate change, while seawater lapped at the steps of the Capitol. Too bad that snowball guy wasn't still around so somebody could shove his face under it until he stopped moving. Pacifica had built seawalls for its major ports, but now I was afraid it wouldn't be enough. Deja, what's going to happen to the launch companies? I said in a shaky voice. My symbiote began an analysis, processing data from the packet and accessing Cloud Ares for more cycles. Translucent maps of projected sea level rise and a rotating globe showing the webs of supply chains for each company in colored lines, all frayed. I felt my blood run cold as our distant root system died before our eyes, before my eyes. I tracked to bring up the demo net. Aggregators merged hundreds of arguments and counterarguments into a conversation between a few synthesized voices representing the most popular points of view. Let's go home, expressed in various ways. That was the strongest sentiment, with discussions focusing on how to go about it. By now, I had texts in flashing red letters from both Mom and Dad calling me home. I shuffled down the tunnel to our hab section. I had to resist the urge to bound. My hair brushed against the ceiling of the corridor with each step. I opened the lock to our apartment and ducked under the bulkhead. Shaking with terror, I hurried inside. By unspoken mutual agreement, Mom, Dad, Kayan, and I all clung to each other in a mutual embrace. The demo nut was switched to a contrarian phase now, where the least popular viewpoints would be favored to get a hearing. I eye-tracked to speak. Home? You mean Earth? Maybe you can go there, but what about us? I'd weigh, what, 50 kilos there? 48.61 kilos, my symbiote offered somewhat unhelpfully. At 12 Earth standard years, I was already half a head taller than Dad, and Kayan would tower over him at my age. Willowy was the word Mom liked to use to describe how we looked, all of us kids.
All right.
Okay.
So it's a family story.
It's a family story with a young teen female protagonist.
My goodness.
It'll sell a million.
As long as you have three books, remember, three books.
That's right. Sorry.
But like you said to me earlier, he needs to write the award-winning short story first, right?
Yeah. You got to rack up a few of those short story awards, go to some conventions, have your hand shaken. He or she is an up-and-coming writer. They're going to go far. And then you have your three books in your back pocket ready to rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do it. A couple of things. There are a couple of cliche phrases in here, blood run cold and things like that. You don't need those.
We did like the rove where no rover has gone before. That was very funny. That's good.
Total kick out of that. I would also point out that if you're on Mars and you're living underground, summer doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So the school year is probably not going to be an Earth human, school's out for the summer type school year. So school's out is fine. But the idea of a seasonal change triggering the end of an academic year is probably not the same on Mars as it is on Earth. I like the voice of your protagonist.
Yes.
She is a very smart young lady who, actually, when Blue Gal and I talked about this, I see the conflict coming if it's a, because the crisis has arrived. It's climate change. And there it's a little bit problematic about who, when this actually happens. Because you have a fairly well-developed human colony on Mars. Mm-hmm. With people there and working and drilling, and the next batch of colonists are coming. So this is not happening in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
This is happening 100 years from now. Mm-hmm. Or 70 years from now. But somehow people still remember the snowball guy.
So yes, right.
I don't think that's going to happen. The idea of a catastrophe on Earth and causing a triggering a crisis on Mars or Luna or wherever is very classic golden age science fiction. So way to go. You are right in the Robert Heinlein sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice of your protagonist is very strong. So the crisis as I see it, and I'm taking a wild leap here, is does our protagonist identify as an Earthling or a Martian?
Ah.
My guess is she's a Martian. At heart, she believes Mars is her home. So why would she want to go back to Earth? What's the big deal? It's their problem. They screwed it up. We're here trying to fix this. What difference is a handful more people going to make on a doomed planet anyway? So at least that's my jumping ahead guess. I'd like to jump to the middle of the next chapter. So really just comb through it. Drop some of the phrases you don't need. There's one quaking with terror. You don't need... Oh, shaking with terror. I hurried inside. You don't need the shaking with terror part. We get that you're afraid. You know, I hurried inside is all you need.
Mm-hmm.
So, way to go. Good work. Robert Heinlein would be proud. and keep going.
Yeah, but you said something earlier that I thought was wise, which is how Robert Heinlein would have written this story.
Yeah.
And he made some mistakes. You want to talk about that for just a sec?
Yeah. This is the inherent problem of dealing with science fiction in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
William Gibson has just about given up doing that. A lot of writers have, because the near future is so, there's so much chaos. There's so many things all colliding all at once. There's climate change and cloning and nanotechnology and artificial intelligence. All the basic themes of science fiction are all sort of colliding right now.
Yep.
So nobody has any idea what the next 50 years are going to look like. And that's probably a terrifying thing. So any story that projects into the very near term of Earth is fraught with problems. Not problems from a writing point of view, but a problem of... It becomes, it goes out of date really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert Heinlein, for example, in his basement had a chalkboard with the 3,000 years of the future spelled out. This will happen, then this will happen, then a theocracy, then faster than light travel, and da 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 da. And he would, for inspiration or for continuity, he'd write stories in those various epochs. Not entirely, but it was a good way of sort of keeping his stories disciplined. But, of course, a lot of it was wrong. There was no nuclear war on Earth.
Yeah.
There was
no
post-apocalyptic war on Earth. We did not have colonies on the moon in 1980. And there's no faster than light drive. Nuclear power didn't solve everything.
Yeah.
So there's always that problem of setting a story in the very near future. But the problem is, again, it's not a writer's problem. It's just the fact that the future will overtake you sometimes. So a lot of the apocalyptic stories from the 50s and 60s are still fun to read, but they didn't happen.
And they took place in 1980. Yes.
They did. In the far future, 1982, when man is walking on Jupiter. Well, there's no life on Mars. There are no... canals on Mars. Ray Bradbury got away with this because he wrote poetically and symbolically. So there's nothing wrong with climate change story. There's nothing wrong with the life on Mars story. Those are great themes. The timing just seems a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
The reality of a habitat on Mars, a colony on Mars, it is much further in the future than a lot of the events would seem to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the writer. Figure that out.
Yeah, right. All right. Thank you so much to both of you, Eric and Kay, for writing these stories to us. We will be back next week with two more stories.
Yes.
For Science Fiction University. I think they're going very well.
We might slow down in a week or two because we have to go someplace.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to Netroots Nation in 3 weeks.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about our podcast that weekend because we have all kinds of opportunities.
So write us a science fiction story set in the very near future.
No, happening in St. Louis in
2 weeks.
No.
See what happens.
We'll be back next week with more Science Fiction University. Yay!
Yay!
I love you, Driftglass.
I love you, baby. Bye.
Bye.